are listening to Books Are My People, a bi-weekly podcast for book lovers with book news, book recommendations, and ruminations on living pretty much a quarantined literary life in Los Angeles. This is episode 28. I'm recording on Thursday, July 23rd. Hello, and a big welcome to new listeners who are joining us for the first time. I feel like ever since the quarantine began, I'm listening to less podcasts, not more, because I'm still running on the same tank of gas since March, since I hardly spend any time in my car anymore. So I just wanted to thank you for listening. It's my podcast birthday. Happy 1 year to me. I started this podcast a year ago in order to share my passion for all things book related, and I've had so much fun and learned a lot about podcasting over the past year. So I just wanted to say thank you to the 2,500 listeners who have tuned in over the past year, hailing from every single continent, which just blows my mind. If you haven't yet, do drop me a line at booksaremypeople@gmail.com and let me know if you've enjoyed any of the books I've recommended. There are so many ways to celebrate my big podcast birthday. You can listen to more episodes, you can share the podcast with a book-loving friend, rate the podcast on iTunes, shoot me an email, or follow me on Instagram at Jennifer Calogeras. I am so excited to have Katie Yocum here with us today to talk about her book and also about writing. But first, it's time for a very brief bookish news. I don't really have a ton of news today, but I will say that this is the busiest release month that July has ever seen in the book world, because so many publishers delayed publication of their books earlier in the year due to the pandemic, a huge amount of spring releases that had been pushed are coming out right now. Summer is typically a slower season for book publication before the big push in the fall to get the book award nominees out in time, so it's a very exciting summer for book lovers for sure. Viet Tan Nguyen, who wrote The Sympathizer and The Refugees, has a new book coming out. I loved both of those books so much. This new one is called The Committed and is set in Paris in 1982, and I'm very excited about it. And Colson Whitehead also recently revealed on Twitter that the title of his next book is Harlem Shuffle, and it is going to hit shelves in the fall of 2021. Last but not least, Rainbow Rowell's delightful young adult novel, Eleanor and Park, will be a movie. If you haven't read that book yet, it's such a sweet story that I think adults and teens would love. I continue to post virtual literary events that are happening on my blog, www.jennifercalogeras.com, if you want to stay up to speed on the latest literary activities. And now I am thrilled to welcome author Katie Yocum to the show. Katie is from Kansas and currently lives in Kentucky. Her debut novel, Three Ways to Disappear, was a Barnes & Noble top indie favorite and was also the recipient of so many other awards: the Siskiyou Prize for Environmental Literature, the First Horizon Award, and the Micropress Award. And it was also shortlisted for the Eric Hoffer Book Award Grand Prize. And if you read this book, you will understand why. It's just so stunning. I finished it in 2 days because I couldn't put it down. Katie's work has also appeared in Newsweek, Lit Hub, Salon, among others, and she holds an MFA in writing from Spalding University. So welcome, Katie. It's so nice to have you.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
So tell us where you are now.
I am sitting in my home in the front room, which was previously kind of a combination living room, dining room, and is now as a living room, dining room office, because like everyone else, I'm working from home these days. So I'm in Louisville, Kentucky, and working from home.
Well, before we dive into your fantastic novel, Three Ways to Disappear, I just wanted to tell listeners what this beautiful novel is about. So at the heart of it, it's a story about sisters who are born in India and then move back to the States where they come of age. There's Sarah, who becomes a journalist and travels the world, and her sister Quinn, who leads a bit of a quieter life in Kentucky with her two children and husband. Sarah ends up returning to India for a new job working at the Bengal Tiger Preservation, and the story alternates between each sister's point of view, and themes include family history, environmental preservation, and family secrets. It's truly one of those novels that you can't put down because it's so beautifully rendered. I have so many passages underlined in your book, and I'm not a big annotator when it comes to reading. The writing I found to be so lush and sumptuous, and something about it reminded me of Milan Kundera. I don't know, has anyone ever told you that before?
Wow, no, but I'm incredibly flattered. Thank you so much.
So I've read the afterword in the book, but for the listeners out there, I guess my first question for you is, where did you find the inspiration for this book?
Oh, well, that's easy. I have been a big cat fan all of my life. So this book takes place partly, as you said, on a tiger reserve. And I found myself, I've loved big cats since I was a little girl. I think it started with the movie Born Free. And then I grew up and I outgrew that love, or so I thought, until the tigress at the Louisville Zoo had a litter of cubs. And then I just became obsessed with them. And I went to the zoo all the time. I watched them grow up. And at some point, this story started to write itself in my head. But it all started with the tigers. It did not start with the human story, the family story, the sister story that all came later. It started with just this crazy love I have for the tigers.
Well, you can see that love in the story. There's just such reverence for them throughout the book. The relationship between the two sisters felt so real and true. So I had to ask if you yourself have a sister.
I do. I have two sisters. I'm actually the youngest of three. And, you know, growing up, I would not describe us as close. In fact, I came along right behind my middle sister, and she always kind of hated me. I think I came along, you know, too quickly, and she didn't get to be the baby. But, you know, we had that intense relationship growing up, even though it was intense in kind of a tough way. We fought a lot, and we weren't close. And I think I always kind of regretted that. And I think you can see that a little bit in the relationship between the two sisters in the book, Sarah and Quinn. They want to be close with each other, but there are some distances there that they're not quite sure how to bridge.
Absolutely. Yeah, they keep sort of misfiring or miscommunicating, and you can feel their interiority, all the things that they want to say to each other, but it's almost like they have to get over this hump of just being able to be brutally honest, and that doesn't happen until later in the book, where they have a reckoning. Have you spent time yourself in India?
Yes, I went there not long after I got the idea for the book and started writing it. I realized very quickly in the first draft of the book that I couldn't write the book without actually, you know, setting foot on the ground there and seeing what it was like. So I went there with my mom in 2006, actually, and we went to Ranthambore National Park, where the book is set, and a couple of other parks as well. And it was just an amazing experience. I mean, riding around in these open jeeps in the national park and experiencing tigers up close was, you know, one of the most remarkable experiences of my life. It was just unforgettable.
That sounds amazing. And I think I also read in the afterword that one of the tigers in the book was modeled directly after a tiger that you got to know there, right?
Yes, Muchley. She was, they called her the Lady of the Lake, or the Queen of Ranthambore. She was, you know, kind of the most charismatic and the most visible tigress at Ranthambore. She ruled this territory around the lakes, and she was just a marvel, just the most beautiful tiger. And I got to see her several times while I was there because we were in her territory, and she had three cubs at the time. And we got to see her. We got to see her with her cubs, and she was just such an inspiration. So a lot of what is in the book with the tiger sightings is based directly on my real experiences. So some of it is imagined, some of it is kind of extrapolated from experiences I had.
And my last question comes from more of a crafting angle in terms of writing. I'm curious about your approach to writing fiction, whether or not you are a plotter who kind of makes these intricate outlines, or are you a writer who just writes without cementing the novel's direction ahead of time, kind of waiting for it to take shape?
I am very much not a plotter. This book came to me sort of as this, you know, some feelings and some urges and some ideas, and it just grew very organically, and it took many drafts and many revisions for the story to start to come together.
So now we will move on to the books. Katie has three titles that she's going to share with us. So would you like to start us off with your first pick?
Absolutely. So when I was choosing my books, I thought about the things that have gotten me through the pandemic, or I should say are getting me through the pandemic. And I thought that three things are art and nature and just pure diversion, a story to get lost in. So the first book I want to talk about kind of falls into that final camp. It's one of those wonderful, encompassing stories. It's called Sleeping Together by Kitty Cook. So this is an amazing, just such an enjoyable read. Vanessa, who's known as Ness, finds herself in a strange love triangle when an experimental sleeping pill causes her to literally share dreams with her coworker. So the problems start when she realizes she would rather share a dreaming life with her colleague than a waking life with her husband, who is pressuring her to have a baby, to start a family. So trigger warning, Ness's life was derailed 10 years ago when she was raped at a frat party in college, and she's never told anyone, and now that avoidance is really coming home to roost with a vengeance. She's going to do everything she can not to let go of her secret, and that decision leads her to make one bad choice after another. And of course, that makes for fantastic reading. There's just nothing like watching a character dig herself into a really deep hole while you cheer for her to get out. This book is funny. It's hilarious, actually, despite what I just said about some of the subject matter. It's just a wild ride. It's part comedy, it's part thriller, it's part relationship drama, it's part sexy romance. So I use the romance word, but don't think sweet. I would say it's spicy, it's salty, and it's surprisingly meaty, really, to continue with the food theme there. Her commentary about marriage and about what it's like to be a woman in the world just really lands. There's so much in it about secrets and lies and the life we want to live versus the life we're actually living. And the good news for me, I loved this book so much. It was such an absorbing read. And it's the first book in a trilogy. And the second book actually came out recently. It's called Poison Dream. And I just wanted to say that if there are any production companies out there listening, these books would make fantastic television. So I recommend them for anyone looking for something completely unpandemic related. A great place to lose yourself for a few days. So this book is called Sleeping Together, and it's by Kitty Cook.
That sounds amazing. I am putting that on the top of my to-read list. My first pick is also very humorous and out there. It is called Parakeet by Marie Helen Bettino, and it came out quite recently. Bettino is the author of 2 a.m. at the Cat's Pajamas, which I spoke about in episode 23. So I was in a bit of a reading rut over the last month when I started Parakeet, and it just yanked me out of my rut and reminded me why I love reading so much. It's about a 36-year-old woman who remains unnamed throughout the book. She's in a hotel on Long Island, sort of decompressing right before her own wedding, when a parakeet flies through her hotel room window, and right away, the woman realizes that this bird is in fact her grandmother incarnate. And her grandmother slash parakeet has a lot to say. But the biggest piece of advice, which really is more of a directive, is to make amends with the woman's estranged brother before her wedding. Grandma Parakeet really wants her grandkids to kiss and make up. They've had a huge falling out, the brother and the sister, and they've been estranged for years ever since the brother overdosed on heroin at his own wedding. As a parting gift, or perhaps an omen, the parakeet poops all over the bride-to-be's wedding dress, leaving her in a bit of a quandary. So from here, we experience a day in the life of this woman, this bride-to-be, and she's also just struggling in general. She questions whether or not she should even be getting married in the first place. And you also see her at work, where she's a writer of sorts. She has an interesting job where she writes down victims' case histories for an injury attorney. And so she's taking other people's narratives and then presenting them to the court. And we learn about her own personal involvement in an injury many years ago that changed the course of her own life. I don't want to reveal too much about what happens plot-wise, but it's basically a day in the life, kind of a la Confederacy of Dunces, or like Bertino's previous book, 2 a.m. at the Cat's Pajamas. That book also takes place over the course of a day. So we basically follow her along as she's working through the multiple threads of her life. Her musings are at times hysterically funny and sometimes really poignant and moving. So if you're looking for a voice-driven book that will make you laugh and cry, this is the book for you. It's about identity, family, forgiveness, trauma, and it's so beautifully crafted down to the sentence level. And again, that was Parakeet by Marie Helen Bertino.
Well, the next book that I want to talk about, that sounds amazing, by the way. I'm writing that down. I'm definitely reading Parakeet. That sounds like a lot of fun. So the next book that I want to talk about is a book about art, specifically a book about an artist. And as I said earlier, art is one of the things getting me through the pandemic. This book is called Blue Territory by Robin Lippincott. It's a small book, just 135 pages, and it's made up of brief, gorgeous essays about the great abstract expressionist painter Joan Mitchell. So if you've never heard of Joan Mitchell, well, most people haven't, and that is an injustice. She was a contemporary of Jackson Pollock, who's world famous. She was painting in the 40s and the 50s and beyond, and she was every bit Jackson Pollock's equal, if not his better, but she was a woman in a very macho art world. So we don't know her name. A gallery owner once actually said to her, "Joan, if only you were French and male and dead, I'd show you." So you can see what she was up against. But her work is stunning, and this book is really a love song to her and her amazing paintings. So one of the reasons that I chose this book, aside from the joy of luxuriating in great art, is that the chapters, the little essays, are so tiny. They're only two or three pages long. And because our attention spans are so short these days, it's nice to know that you're only committed to reading a bite at a time. But these bites, these little bites, they are tiny, but wow, are they delicious. And you just want to savor every one of them. It's such a sensory delight. This book just revels in colors and in the physical act of painting, the way Joan wields that paintbrush on the canvas. And as a reader, you just get swept along in the beauty. And as a bonus, this book will also make you want to travel. It makes you want to track down her paintings at museums around the country and just go stand in front of them and soak them up. I actually did that once. I was stuck in Chicago one afternoon when I had a flight canceled, and I hot-footed it down to the Art Institute just so I could stand in front of a Joan Mitchell painting. And it was so rewarding. It was so worth the effort. So, of course, we're not traveling very much right now, but until then, you can look up her paintings on your computer and get a taste of them, and then maybe add a museum trip to your list of places to go once we're all free to travel again. So that's Blue Territory, and that's by Robin Lippincott.
I am not familiar with Joni Mitchell, but I kept thinking about Joni Mitchell's Blue album because that's my favorite right. Joni Mitchell album. My next pick is called The Return by Rachel Harrison. And just as a little fun fact aside, I'm finishing up a novel right now, and lo and behold, my protagonist is named Rachel Harrison. So it was really funny to pick up this book and see that name on the cover. Horror is not a genre that I normally gravitate towards. I spook very easily, but I have reviewed a couple of other horror books on the podcast. I think I've done 2 Grady Hendrix books. I just love him because he's horror, but he's also really funny and clever. And this book, I'd say specifically, is feminist horror. So this book is about a group of longtime college friends. There's May and Molly and Elise and Julie, and the book is told from Elise's point of view. And of the foursome, Elise and Julie are truly the closest. And one day, Julie, who at this point, they're done with college, they're living their lives, Julie gets married, she goes for a hike alone and never comes back. So there's a huge search for her, her husband is distraught, all of the friends are so upset, and after a big chunk of time passes, everyone just sort of reconciles the fact that their friend passed away, somehow mysteriously disappeared, passed away on this hike, and she just won't ever be found. However, 2 years go by and Julie returns. She's alive. She's fine. She can't tell the police where she's been or what happened to her because she has total amnesia. Doesn't remember a thing. Her friends kind of tread cautiously around her. They don't want to ask too many questions because she seems a bit unsettled. So instead, they decide that what they need is a getaway in the woods, which really, if you've just disappeared for 2 years in the woods, don't go back to the woods. But they find this very kitsch hotel where their plan is to bond and have fun and basically do anything but talk about how hard the last 2 years have been really on all of them. So the hotel in the book, for those of you who have traveled to California, there's a hotel in San Luis Obispo, which is sort of in central California, called the Madonna Inn. And we stop there often whenever we're driving to San Francisco or back. It's a great midway point. And each room there is themed. There's a jungle room and an all pink room and a Swiss chalet room and even a caveman room. And so we try and stay in a different room each time just to get the full experience. And the hotel in the book totally reminded me of that. It's kitsch veering towards creepy, although in the book it's the creepy factor is souped up. So the women are each staying in their own room, and Elise keeps thinking that she's seeing things out of the corner of her eye, sort of flickers or flashes of movements, or she'll come back to the room and a window will be open that she knows she did not leave open. The other guests who are staying at the hotel seem to diminish as time goes by, and even the hotel staff, which was robust at the beginning, starts waning. Something weird is definitely happening, and it definitely seems to all be revolving around their friend Julie, who has changed since her disappearance. Her teeth keep falling out. She's eating raw meat, and she has really, really bad body odor. So all of the friends just keep plodding along, determined to act as though everything is fine. It's a super creepy book. It kept me awake at night. I should have known it was going to do this because I do not have tolerance for creepiness. But at the heart of it, it's a book about friendship and trauma, grief and denial, and also how friendships can grow apart over time. And that is The Return by Rachel Harrison. Katie, what's your last pick?
My last pick, and by the way, that sounds amazing. I also don't do horror, but I might do that one. My last pick is nothing like the one that you just picked. In keeping back to what's keeping me sane in the pandemic, this one is all about the natural world. It's called The Soul of an Octopus. The subtitle is A Surprising Exploration into the Wonder of Consciousness by Cy Montgomery. Cy Montgomery is a fantastic writer about nature and specifically about the animal kingdom. There is not a better writer out there. at capturing the wonders of the natural world, of the animal world, than Cy Montgomery. So this book is my third recommendation. It's a nonfiction book about her a series of relationships that she has with specific octopuses. So you could legitimately argue that there is not a greater wonder in the animal kingdom than the octopus. It's like an alien creature. And reading this book, you find out just how alien it is. For one thing, its brain exists not only in its head, but in each of its eight arms. So each one of those arms has its own brain, and each one of those arms can be doing things independent of all the other arms. And which is kind of amazing. It can taste through its tentacles. It can change not only the color of its skin, but even the texture. And octopuses are just so intelligent and so curious and so engaged and so playful. And it's just exhilarating to read about them. It's just kind of a wild trip. So this book is about Cy's encounters with specific individual octopuses in captivity. So I guess as I'm saying this, I'm realizing that she and I had kind of a similar trajectory. I got fascinated with tigers and, you know, ended up going halfway across the world to encounter them in person. She got fascinated with octopuses and traveled the country to meet different octopuses. So these animals each have their own personality. They like certain people and they dislike others. They remember Cy from one visit to the next, and she becomes friends with some of them. They're just such amazing creatures, and her love for them is completely infectious. And I recommend this book because it's amazing and delightful, and it's the right book to make you appreciate the wonder of life on this planet. You know, we're going through a pretty hard time right now, but there are things out there that are just so incredibly cool, and octopuses are one of them, and this is just a great place to spend some time. So that's The Soul of an Octopus, A Surprising Exploration into the Wonder of Consciousness by Cy Montgomery.
That's been on my to-read list for a while. After my husband likes to watch those late night Science Channel and History Channel. And I remember he told me one day that he had been watching a show about octopuses, and the theory was that they are for sure from another planet because they're the only animal that has the cell makeup that they do. You can't find that in any living creature anywhere else. But that is all for our book recommendations this week. Up next for me is Born a Crime by Trevor Noah. Katie, what are you going to be reading next?
The next book I think I'm going to be reading was actually another animal book that was recommended to me. This is called The Bonobo and the Atheist by Franz Duval.
I will be back in 14 days. Special thanks to Katie Yoakum for visiting today. Please go out and purchase her novel, Three Ways to Disappear. You won't be disappointed. You can link up and purchase any of the books we've talked about today, including Katie's, by clicking on the links in the show notes, and you'll be taken to my bookshop.org store, or go straight to bookshop.org and visit the Books Are My People store. And I hope you all have a wonderfully bookish week. Bye, everyone.